There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm so glad you've taken time out of your day to join us here on the Clark Howard Show, where our goal is simple. It is to empower you with knowledge so you can keep more of what you have. Our websites are Clark.com and ClarkDeals.com, and we have been through a real time with medicine lately. Gosh, the people who work in medicine, doctors, nurses, other medical professionals and personnel who work in medical facilities have been putting their lives on the line to save as many lives as they can during coronavirus. And one of the things that has been clear through the time of the pandemic is how many people in America don't have a regular place to go when they need medical attention. And so a lot of times those people have sought care for coronavirus much later than others, and many times with terrible, terrible results, possibly loss of life as a result of the delay. And so we've got a broken equation in the United States, in spite of the incredible heroic efforts of so many people in medical. We've got a lot of people who start with the handicap, and that is lack of regular access to medical care. So there's been a lot of experimentation going on. Walmart has been opening Walmart health centers, and they are going to increase the number of centers they offer. And I've talked about how CVS is opening medical facilities as well that are retail oriented, like the Walmart one as well. And now Walgreens has announced that they're going to open somewhere around 700 doctor's offices that will be inside Walgreens stores or attached to them. And the design of what Walgreens is doing is that the overwhelming majority of locations that are going to be open are locations that are, as it's called, underserved, that there's a lack of primary care doctors in the zip codes or areas in urban, suburban, and rural areas where the doctor's offices are going to open in the Walgreens. So this is part of a migration in how medical care at the primary level is going to be offered in the United States, where you're going to have more and more retailers who are connected directly to medicine, like Walgreens and CVS, and then those who only indirectly are connected to medicine, like Walmart, getting involved in the delivery of medical care. One of the significant factors in each of these is what economists call price transparency, where you will know when you walk in the door what it's going to cost for the care you are likely to receive. And I gave an example about where Walgreens kind of went off the tracks with this 2 years ago, where Walgreens was doing what CVS was doing with the nurse-in-a-box facilities, where they had the nurse practitioners in the offices in the pharmacies, and CVS has stayed on that course. Well, Walgreens in a lot of places has sold off those facilities to dominant hospitals in an area, and the hospitals use it as a feeder tool to get more patient admissions to their hospitals. And as I did in a story I did for television, I looked at the pricing at the facilities when they'd switch from being Walgreens run essentially nurse in a box to a feeder for hospitals, and you no longer had the ability to just see a price list. You no longer had pricing anything that was approachable anymore once those spaces flipped and became affiliated with hospitals. And so having the involvement and the design from the ground up, where someone can come in and they know what it's going to cost, and they know that someone's available to see 7 days a week and longer than banker's hours, that's where we're headed with primary care. And it's one of the ways we can make a big difference in what healthcare costs moving forward and the outcomes for people when they see someone early instead of delayed care at a hospital emergency room, which is not where someone should be getting primary care any day of the week. It's time for questions you posted for me at clark.com/ask. And producer Kim, who do you have a question from?
This is from Chris in Texas. And Chris says, I've been trying to figure out if there's anything I can do to help with my company's 401k options. The lowest funds expensed ratio is an astonishingly high 1.34%.
Say what?
1.34%. I've reached out to my HR and sent them an email expressing the importance of just adding a few low-cost funds. I was told that they're looking into it, but because of the company's size and the amount of assets, it might not be possible. Still waiting to hear back on that. I also, on my own, reached out to Vanguard to see if they could help, but because I'm just an employee, they couldn't. Clark, is there anything I can do that maybe my HR rep isn't aware of to get those fees down?
Yeah, they probably just lack knowledge about what's available in the marketplace. To give you a comparison, I've got 22 employees in the 401k plan that we provide, and our average expense, average for a fund, is 0.12. And Kim, you said that expense ratio for the lowest was what? 1.34. Wow.
Right.
So what that means is that the employees where you work end up with a great deal less money, maybe on the scale of maybe 40% less money down the road than they would if they were in a low-cost plan. So for you as an employee, if it's something the employer is not really interested in and they're not putting a focus on it or care about it, then what I would do if I were you, if you can't influence the process, is reduce what you contribute to the employer-provided 401k. Instead, fully fund a Roth IRA on your own at one of the ultra-low-cost companies like the ones I have listed on my investment guide at clark.com. But in a lot of cases with smaller employers, it's a lack of knowledge of what's out there rather than just being a smaller employer. Joel, which is it Wealthfront or Betterment that's now offering low-cost 401k plans?
Betterment.
Betterment is something, if you want to make a suggestion to your employer, as a source that would be a very affordable plan for small companies. And speaking of Joel, who do you have a question from?
Clark, this one's from Mary Ann. She says, I've lived in my home for 12 years and my homeowner's insurance may go up a few dollars here and there on average. This year, 2020, I got my letter and my eyes opened wide. $500 more this year for the insurance. I spoke to my neighbors and the same thing seems to be happening for them. Is it because of COVID-19? Should I start looking for a different company, insurance company? If so, what should I look, what do I need to know when I'm looking for a new insurance company?
So I'm guessing no claims against homeowners. So this is like hitting you over the head with a 2x4 that you should shop your coverage and talk to other insurers and see what they would charge you. Something else I'd like you to look at a time you do this and clean sheet shopping for homeowners insurance is, what deductibles do you have right now for coverage? If you still have a mortgage on your home, you want to make sure you don't exceed the deductibles allowed by your mortgage company. But raising your deductibles is one of the most effective ways to lower the premium cost on your homeowner's insurance. Knowing that you don't want to make small claims anyway with homeowners, you want to reserve it for when there's a catastrophic loss. As to a general trend that suddenly homeowners rates are skyrocketing like you and neighbors have experienced, I haven't seen that anywhere. I've not heard of that. It could be going on and I've just missed it. There are some insurers that are raising rates on some of their insurance products, but generally more in the life insurance area because of how low interest rates are right now. But I've not heard of that with homeowners or auto, what's known as property and casualty insurance. So shopping is your most effective friend. Kim?
Nancy in South Carolina says, my daughter has two federal student loans. One is at 6% and one is at 5.5%. With interest rates so low now, should she refinance them? And where would we do that? Is it even possible to refinance through the government? Because I know you, I've heard you say that federal loans are better than private loans.
Yeah, so this is a tough one. You got to think this through, because if you give up a federal loan, you give up the borrower protections that exist with a federal loan. But right now, because of the low interest rates that I just mentioned a second ago involving insurance companies, the deals on private student loan refinances may be cheaper enough that in certain situations, it's worth giving up the borrower protections of federal loans to get the much lower rate you may find on private fixed rate student loans right now. SoFi is the best known of them, SOFI. There's also others called Splash and Credible, as well as Discover. The credit card people are involved in student loans now, you may find, and a number of others. Shop it and see what's out there in the marketplace, and you may decide to make that move.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Wes is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Wes. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Wes, thanks. I understand you're selling a home, buying a home, whole bunch of transactions going on. How can I be of service to you with that?
Yeah, I was just wondering, when I purchased the new home, I didn't want to throw all the money I made off of my house I'm selling currently into the house. I was wondering if I should pay off my vehicle that I just bought a year ago and save myself a $400 payment a month.
Well, that's an interesting question, because if you think about it, if you take that money and you use it to kill off your vehicle payment, what you're doing is you're then borrowing that money against the new house and stretching the payments out on it over 30 years versus how many years of payments are left on the truck or car. Vehicle.
Yeah, it's a truck, 4 years.
4 years. So you're taking four-year borrowing and turning it into 30-year borrowing. Do you know what I mean? Because if you don't have the money to put into the new home, you're borrowing that additional amount. And then with a 30-year loan, you're going to be paying interest on, essentially, if you think of it in a crazy sort of way, you're paying interest on the truck for the next 30 years instead of paying it for 4 years.
Yes, and the interest rate on the truck is 4%, where the house is going to be 2.7. But my thought
but
was
even,
that I'm
even
going
if
to
the
have,
house is 2.7, you're still borrowing that money, the truck money, for 30 years instead of four.
All right. Now, would it make better sense that I'm spending an extra $40 a month over 30 years than $400 a month for the next 4 years, but I might use that money towards putting principal on the house throughout the years?
I hate to tell you no.
No?
Okay. It really would be better for you just to pay the truck as agreed and pay it off over the remaining 4 years. And then have more money to put into the home purchase, bigger down payment, reduced total balance on the loan from the get-go. You're going to have an ultra-low interest rate on that loan, and there's such great advantages to it. But I have a weird question for you. Uh-huh. If you're thinking of, hey, I could just pay extra every month on that 30-year loan, which is not a really high priority if you're getting a loan at 2.7%. But even if you did, maybe you would be better off taking out a 15-year loan and having an even lower rate. How old are you, Wes?
32.
So think of this. If you could swing the payments on a 15-year loan on your new home, you take all that money from the proceeds of the home you're selling, and it all goes into the new home. If you could afford the payment on the new home on a 15-year loan, at 47 years old, you own that home free and clear. If you take out a 30-year loan, you're 62, almost double your current age.
I mean, do payments usually differ largely between a 15 and a 30-year loan?
Oh, yeah. You pay, you know, because you're paying off the debt in half the time. So the payment's not twice on a 15-year loan, but you do pay a fair amount more, but you're getting a lower interest rate as well. So I'm just trying to give you different possibilities, because if you take all the proceeds from the sale of the existing home, they all go into the purchase of the new home, you're going to have a lower loan balance. And maybe, just maybe, in your budget, that 15-year loan payment would be affordable. An alternative is you take out a 20-year mortgage instead of a 30-year, and then you're still done paying at 52 instead of 62. And the 20-year loan will not have a significantly larger payment than a new 30-year. Just some things for you to think about as alternatives. But I'm never a big fan of rushing to pay off a vehicle loan instead of ending up with a lower mortgage to start with that you have for the entire life of that mortgage. Welcome to the Clark Howard Show, where it's all about you learning ways to save more and spend less, and don't let anyone ever rip you off. Our websites are clark.com and clarkdeals.com. So we talked about something back in May, and that was shocking statistics about how much people who have stayed employed through the disruptions of coronavirus have reduced their personal spending. And as people move above the average income in the United States who've stayed employed, they really never knew how much of what they spent money on every month was discretionary. In other words, a choice instead of a have to. As you move steadily up the income line, people who would complain, I don't know where all my money goes, suddenly found that their spending has gone down, down, down. And there are a number of factors for it. But the typical spending that people are doing on things running out and about is down by Federal Reserve measurements that I've seen from various reports by a third to as much as 40%. And who knew that so much of spending that we do beyond people who are just trying to get by, I'm not talking about that, I'm talking about for people who have a steady paycheck and, again, are above the average income in the United States, have found that, hey, they're not spending the money they were spending on stuff. They're not spending the money on clothing. They're obviously not spending money overwhelmingly on travel. Eating out's been a huge one. The more you move up the income ladder, the less people have been eating out. And eating at home is generally so much cheaper than eating out that people have found a lot more money in their pockets. I walk every day, and I was talking with a doctor who I passed by. He said he can't believe how his credit card bills have vanished. He said, I'm not spending any money at all. And that has been the experience of so many people. But it's not just people talking. New data from the Federal Reserve just released finds that the amount of debt on credit cards has collapsed in the last 5 months. That the amount of overall indebtedness on credit cards has dropped below $1 trillion and down by a substantial amount over just a few months. And so we always wonder, and let's drill this down to each of us as individuals. We always wonder, is there room in our budgets to build more money for retirement, to build more money in an emergency account, to reduce the amount of debt we have in our lives? And the answer is, unless you are living truly paycheck to paycheck, there is room to meet goals. There is room to reduce debt. And this is something that I want you to take a good lesson out of a really tough time in America. I mean, this has been a tough time, and this is one potential bright thing out of it. And that is the ability for you and me to get our expenses under better control and more meet the goals that we know we should be about, having daily security, financial security with a rainy day account, reducing outstanding debt, and building money for retirement. So there's a big difference between have to's and want to's, and people are now paying attention to that and hopefully building new habits. It's time for questions you posted for me at clark.com/ask. And who's up here?
Clark, it's me. And Alan's got a question. Alan in Florida. He says, my fiance and I are hoping to get married in May of 2021. We're interested in taking a trip to Europe for our honeymoon. When would be a good time to start booking flights and hotels for this in order to get the best deal? And do you have any recommendations on booking travel in the midst of coronavirus in general? Also, should I be adding a trip protection to the purchase?
That's a lot of great questions. So this has been a very, very difficult thing to figure out. There have been, I get from three different subscription services, I get alerts to airfares every day. And the airfares I'm seeing to Europe, within the United States, around the world, are so ridiculously cheap by historical numbers. It's so tempting. So if you see a screaming deal to Europe, it's one of those things that is almost like buying a junk bond, because we don't know those flights are going to operate. We don't know that the airline you'd buy it on is still going to be around next summer. And we don't know if you're going to want to travel, or if the country will permit, that you want to go to in Europe, will permit Americans to enter. And these are all so many unknowns. Most trip insurance will not cover you for many of the circumstances that might lead you to cancel your trip. So here's a general guideline I'll give you, and this applies beyond what you're considering for next summer, but for any travel that someone's booking for many months into the future. You want to know what your rights are to cancel, what happens with your money if you do cancel, Many airlines and travel suppliers say there are no worry cancellations. But just because they say that, what does that mean? Do you get a refund? Do you have like a gift certificate to use on that airline at a later date at no penalty? What happens with any hotels you book or anything like that? I would say with accommodations, book only refundable bookings for now. Or do bookings that you only have to make a reservation that you have to pay much later. With air, protect your air by buying most of the money, by along with buying a bargain, buy cancel for any reason insurance. It'll cost you about 9% of the cost of the trip, of the airline tickets, and will not give you back all your money if you just have to bail, but it'll give you back 3/4 of your money if you have to bail. And so with that layer on top of a booking, I think it's a worthy risk to book a steal of a deal now, knowing that you can get back most of the money if the conditions are not good to take that travel a year from now. Kim?
Kalei in Georgia says, I've been employed by the same company for over a year as a W-2 employee. I make over $100,000 a year and I have excellent credit. My company recently restructured and changed my status to a 1099 independent contractor.
Wow.
While I don't have the same benefits as I did as a W-2 employee, I will make more money with this structure. The problem is my husband and I recently applied for a mortgage, and now we're being told that since I've switched to 1099, I no longer qualify for the mortgage. Right. Does this make any sense? And also, what other options would I have now aside from finding a cosigner?
Okay, so the mortgage market has become, like just like any credit market, has become very nervous about extending loans. And anybody who has any situation that is not really conventional and doesn't have a really solid credit score, you're going to have more hoops to jump through to get the loan. So when you were self-employed, which you are now as a 1099, you are a non-employee. And for many mortgage lenders, that automatically will kick you out of their system and they will not make you a loan. This is a case where you want to go to a mortgage broker and get the help of a mortgage broker who is very experienced, will know the market and know which lenders will make a loan to you as a 1099 non-employee or self-employed individual, and you'll meet their criteria, but not the criteria used by the lender in particular you've gone to. You will likely pay, I'm thinking lately, I think you'll pay about 3/8 of a point higher with a lender that will take you as a 1099 instead of a W-2 person. But again, this will vary from lender to lender, and it's going to be ultra important for you to shop the market. You might also try credit unions in your area who may well be willing to make a loan to you, because many credit unions keep loans in what's known as in portfolio on their own books and will be willing to make a loan to you that a traditional bank will not be willing to make. So you have more work in front of you with your former employer's reorganization casting you off as essentially an independent contractor. Joel?
Clark Gregg in California says, I'd like your opinion on pet medical insurance. I have two household cats that are each about 13 years old, and it appears that they are beginning to experience some health issues. I will save you from the particulars, but I'd appreciate your input on whether or not pet insurance makes sense. Is it worth obtaining? And do you have any places to go to shop for it that you can think of?
What I recommend with pet insurance is that you talk to the vet that you use and find out which policies they experience as having the best payment records, particularly with an older pet. A lot of pet insurance policies, the brochures are colorful and beautiful and have really cute pictures of dogs and cats. But when you get down to it, as a dog or cat gets older or has particular medical conditions or a particular breed, specifically with dogs, you're going to find that the coverage will not really be worth the premiums you would pay. And that's why I like to rely on the experience of veterinary medicine practices, which particular policies they find are the ones that do the best job at paying off when there is a medical condition. But having mentioned already that your cats are older, you're going to find that the ability to find a really good policy is going to be a bit frustrating. We have never had pet insurance on our pets, and there have been certain times with big expenses that they've said at the vet, well, if you had pet insurance, but we have not, and we've had to shoulder the costs of those things, and it's really a personal choice if you want to go the insurance route or know that you could be facing a potentially expensive vet bill. But again, the policy may not cover that bill. That's the rough part. Bridget's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Bridget. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you, Clark?
Good, thank you.
Back in 2007, we were building a home, and it's when the housing market crashed. And when we went to convert our loan from a construction loan to a regular loan, our home was no longer worth what we had paid for it. So the bank required that we have an additional down payment. So we borrowed $50,000 from my 401k. We make payments out of each paycheck, and we pay it back with 7.75% interest.
Wow!
And with all the, I know, which is a lot.
All right, so this has been 13 years. What's your balance now left of the 50?
It's 36,000.
Wow. So you haven't made,
this is
big interest. You're making payments to it, and you're really not that far along with the balance.
Exactly. And what I was trying to figure out with the COVID-19 penalty forgiveness, with other things, is there anything that would apply to this type of loan?
So, yeah, you potentially could, you end up paying the tax. You just don't pay the 10% penalty. But I'm looking at the numbers, and I've got a whole different way I'm thinking about this. So,
are you still
in this home?
Yes, we're still in the home.
So the value went upside down on you. By this point, 13 years later, it may be a lucky 13. I'm assuming your home is worth far more than what the remaining loan balance is on your mortgage.
It is, and we have, in 3 years, it'll be paid off.
That's fantastic. Wow, think about that turnaround.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons we were putting more towards the mortgage and not really, making extra payments towards the mortgage, not really worrying about paying back the 401k loan since we were paying it back to ourselves with interest.
But you're still paying this very high rate of interest, still have this big balance. I don't want you to create the tax bill. I mean, what you would avoid is $3,600 in penalty under the coronavirus statute, but you'd still have the ordinary income tax on taking $36,000 effectively out of your 401k. So
right, correct.
I'm not exactly jumping for joy about that as an option. You have such a short time period left with your mortgage. So you took the wind out of my sails about doing a refi and putting this into it. The way you figured 3 years left, is that still paying extra on the mortgage?
Correct.
So I would rather you just pay the mortgage as agreed. What interest rate does it carry?
2.875%.
So at 2.875%, stop rushing on that and instead take the money and throw it at that $36,000 balance.
Okay.
And get that paid off. I mean, you're so aggressive with paying down debt that there's no reason for you to create a tax burden for yourself and remove money out of your life that can be used for your retirement years by doing a premature withdrawal from your 401k.
Okay.
So just pay as agreed at that incredibly low mortgage rate you have, and the money you've been throwing at it, throw at that 36 grand. And then when you finish paying off the mortgage, eventually, if there's any balance left still on the 401k loan, then whatever you were paying as you're agreed to on the mortgage, throw it at the whatever will remain of that 401k loan. So no upside in this case to using the penalty-free withdrawal from a 401k. You're listening to The Clark Howard Show. Thanks for joining us today. The Clark Howard Show is produced by Kim Drobes, Joel Larsgaard, Deborah Reese, and Jim Ayers. And remember, 24 hours a day, we're there to serve you at clark.com and clarkdeals.com.